Hello, listeners. This is the Out of This World radio program with your host, Ted Maher, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW in Bellevue, Washington on 1150 AM. The program focuses on Out of This World information, including psychic phenomena, metaphysics, UFOs, and predictions for the coming years in Seattle, the United States, and beyond. We will have only the best psychics and astrologers and UFO researchers in the world on our program, and I guarantee it will be the most interesting radio program you've ever listened to, as you will hear information here that you will simply not hear elsewhere. I'm pleased to tell you we are the fastest growing psychic and metaphysical radio program in the world, and we have listeners in over 60 different countries and all the world's continents, from Vancouver to Toronto to Montreal in Canada, to Dublin, Ireland, and London, England, to Paris, France, Zurich, Switzerland, to Rome, Italy, Madrid, Spain, Lisbon, Portugal, Moscow, Russia, Oslo, Norway, Berlin, Germany, Austria, Croatia, Greece, as well as Kiev in Ukraine, Istanbul, Turkey, Israel, Jordan, Syria, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Asia, all over Australia, New Zealand, to Japan, and South and Central America, including Brazil, Mexico, and Argentina, Paraguay, Venezuela, and Cuba. I welcome you all to Out of This World Radio today. Today we have a split show that I guarantee you'll find very interesting and out of this world. During the first hour, from now until 3 p.m. Pacific time, we will be interviewing engineer and inventor Wilbur Allen. He has photographed between 60 and 70,000 images of UFOs in and around Washington, D.C., including the White House, which should be really interesting. Living only 6 blocks away from the White House in Washington, D.C., he photographs UFOs on a nightly basis using some of the most sophisticated Nikon photography equipment available. His background is that at the age of 5, he encountered a group of gray extraterrestrials and has had an interest in UFOs and ETs since then. We'll be going into Wilbur's background in a few minutes. He's on the line now from Washington, D.C. And during the second hour, from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m., we'll be interviewing two representatives of the Galactic Federation of Planets, Colleen and Sheldon Niddle, who will provide an overview of the various friendly human and other alien groups which exist on this planet and who are trying to help us spiritually evolve. But before we begin today, I would like to make an announcement. Yesterday, I was robbed of $1,500, which is the money I had collected to pay for the show for next month in September. Out of This World Radio is a listener-supported radio program, and the thieves who took this money took it from all the people who support the program. And now, unfortunately, I must ask you all for donations so we can continue broadcasting this next month, because without your help, we will not be able to continue broadcasting. I filed a police report. I don't want to go into details what happened, but the money that I had to pay for the show next month is now gone, and I really need your help. Donations of even $1 or $5 or more really do help, and if you'd like to donate, the easiest way to do it is to go to our website at www.outofthisworld1150.com, and in the upper left-hand corner of the first page is a little button called Buy Now. If you click on that button, it'll actually direct you to a PayPal site where you can donate $25. If you'd like to donate a different amount, please email me at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. The purpose of this program is to raise human consciousness and to make this planet a much better place. Thus, your support is crucial to continue the program. It's supported again by private donations, and we really appreciate your help. Before we begin today, I'd also like to thank the many sponsors of this show, including my dear friend Carol, who's been designing my website and providing moral support. Without his friendship and help, this program would not have been possible. My dear friend Ann Nelson, business professor at Walla Walla College. My dear friend Heidi in Switzerland, who's been helping to arrange radio appearances by Eric von Doniken and other wonderful European psychics. My angelic and earthly family, as well as my wonderful sound engineer, Eric Ryder-Burris, and my station manager, Eric Crema, without whose help and support this program would not have been possible. I also would like to thank Dr. Masaru Emoto and his wonderful assistant, Michiko, in Tokyo, Japan, for their support of this program, and would like to strongly urge you to support the Emoto Peace Project for trying to educate school children worldwide and bringing peace to this sometimes troubled world. More information about Dr. Emoto and his wonderful peace project is available on the radio website at www.outofthisworld1150.com. 1 week from today, we will have Phoenix Redhawk, one of the best psychics in New York and on the East Coast, from 2 to 4, 2 to 3 to 3. Then on the second hour of the program from 3 to 4 p.m., we will have Elena Freeland, one of the world's authorities on chemtrails, secret U.S. government program to terraform and geoengineer planet Earth into a much, much different planet than any time in our history. Next month also, we will have Eric Von Däumigen at the end of the month and a whole bunch of other interesting psychics. As always, if you'd like to listen to the show live when it's being broadcast, please go to www.1150kknw.com and click on listen. Otherwise, after the show, please go to our website at www.outofthisworld1150.com and then scroll to the bottom of the page for the recent guests. Wilbur, are you there?
I am still here.
Okay, good. If you could speak up a little bit to make sure that we can hear you okay. Wilbur, tell my many listeners about your background and how you got started in this field.
It started for me as a child at a base in England where I woke up to a room.
Okay, Wilbur, you're a little fuzzy. Can you get to a better line? Is that a cell phone you're on or is that a landline?
I can do this. Let me do this. I'll switch. Hold on.
Yeah, we need to have you switch over.
How does this sound? Does this sound better?
A little bit marginally better, yes.
Okay, it all started for me as a child at a base in England called Scalthorpe, and I woke to a room full of small humanoids in silver spacesuits, and from that point on, everything's been a close encounter. That's when it all started.
Yes. Yes, yes. Alan, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, about what age were you when this happened?
I was 5.
5, okay. Did they abduct you, take you on a spacecraft, and take...
No, they didn't. Everything was localized.
Okay. Okay. Well, have you been contacted by them since then?
Well, periodically, and if you looked at my work, you see most of the samples that I do have, all of the are initially, essentially... close proximity examples. So indeed, on a daily basis, at least based on what I'm able to record, I would say nightly I'm contacted.
I see. Well, you may want to get some protection for yourself because from my understanding, Wilbur, there are two main groups of aliens which visit this planet. One's called the Galactic Alliance, which are mostly human entities, but they're benevolent, who care about us deeply on a spiritual level and want to help us evolve. There's a second group of aliens called the Reptilians, of which the Greys are part of that, and they view humans as basically a food source to be exploited. They're the ones who've been in collaboration with our U.S. government since 1954 when Dwight Eisenhower signed a treaty with them, allowing them to come and abduct humans on a regular basis in exchange for some of their technology. But at any rate, you earlier sent me some wonderful pictures of UFOs, and I just wonder if you could tell our many listeners how you do your photography and what you've seen in 25 words or less, please. Just joking.
But. Well, I entered photography. My father was a professional photographer for the United States military. He was also military intelligence, so I learned from the best. And for me... at least from what I gather, my more advanced photographic technology and technique appeared to have been downloaded into me because most of what I was able to do when I was working with film was far more advanced than the level of the technology itself. So without a doubt, most of what I do and what I am today is the direct result of extraterrestrial contact.
I see. I see. Now, you've been taking... How close do you live to the White House, Wilbur?
I'm 7 blocks away from the White House.
Okay. And when you photograph, do you take them from your home itself, or do you go up to the White House lawn?
I take them from my roof.
I see. Okay. And what kind of equipment do you use?
I use various types of cameras, but primarily Nikon. My main cameras are D4 and D4S Nikons.
And what kinds of things? I know this is hard to do by audio, and the pictures, you know, of course, say 1,000 words. Could you please give out your website so people could look at your pictures that you have on your website?
Well, my website is called UFODCDavidCharlie.com, UFODC.com, and it has 19 chapters of various levels of UFO activity. Initially, I started recording these on 35-millimeter film using a F5 and F100S Nikon film camera, and then I translated from the film format to full-frame digital, which was in 2008, the D700 Nikon. And I started documenting anomalous objects the third day of owning that camera. So I've got orange spheres that landed in front of me and 17 people in Baltimore. So it wasn't something that was generated per se by the camera technology itself that I was utilizing, but more what the camera was recording in terms of events that were presented in front of the lens during the time of the photographs were taken.
Sure. Do you actually see the? Have you been able to photograph UFOs actually landing in and around D.C. or what have you seen? If you could explain that.
Most of what I'm getting, believe it or not, I did an expedition for Country Music Television, my big redneck vacation, in 2012 into Area 51, Groom Lake, Nevada, and I noticed and documented on several occasions while we were filming, this luminous cylindrical anomaly, which based on the technology I was using, and I'm in some of the cases where I filmed in Area 51, I was using a 20-millimeter lens, which is a wide-angle lens. And in my photographic samples with this wide-angle lens of the airspace of Area 51, not the base itself, but the airspace, were these large objects that, in terms of the reality of the sample itself, if you look at the photograph and you see this quarter-inch dash in an entire photograph taken with a 20-millimeter lens, it would indicate without a doubt one of two things. Either the object was extremely large or the object was in motion, which was not necessarily the case. So we based that sample on the fact that what the camera photographed was a large cylindrical object. And then in Sedona, Arizona, the same cylindrical object showed up in time-lapse. And then the same cylindrical object showed up again in time-lapse in Shreveport, Louisiana. And now the same cylindrical object with the same consistency and attributes of Area 51 now show up nightly over my home.
Interesting. Just a real quick question. When you do your photographs, are you in front of the White House or in back of the White House?
From my standpoint, I am seven blocks to the front of the White House. It's the same airspace, mind you. It's still P53 restricted airspace, so I'm in the same airspace. And I mount my camera constantly in the same position nightly, which the camera points itself 90 degrees straight up. So that means frame left of the camera is north, frame right is south. The bottom of the frame would be east, the top of the frame would be west. And the anomalies are flying in the same trajectory, in fact, exactly aligned with the White House.
So, in other words, that trajectory goes into the White House. Is that correct?
I'm saying the trajectory itself, in terms of its direction, leads to the White House. It doesn't go into the White House. It's in White House airspace.
There is a helicopter. I've been told that there is a helicopter landing pad in the back of the White House.
Yes, there
That's
is.
Why I was asking if you were in front or the back, as far as, you know, your photography goes.
It would be in the front, because the helipad at the White House is in the back.
Well, I don't know if you know this author or not, Scott Lemriel, but he'll be on the program a little later to join you, Wilbur. But he has a very unique perspective on the ETs visiting this country and the world. He's written a book called The Sunrise Agenda, and it's the result of 52 years of face-to-face contact with benevolent aliens from the Galactic Alliance. I'm also having on during the second hour Colleen and Sheldon Niddle, who are representatives of the Galactic Alliance. And so it's going to be very interesting to see what, you know, their take is on everything. But I suspect that the craft that you're seeing in and around D.C. and the ones going into the P-53 restricted, so-called restricted airspace, are actually from the reptilians or the Greys or their allies going in to visit the White House and other government buildings. Real quick, Wilbur, with your camera, have you had problems taking pictures at night where particle beams have been directed at your camera where it suddenly malfunctions or melts or any of those kinds of technical problems?
I've had 6 instances where, and the camera photographed them, my camera was physically attacked by something.
Interesting. How would you describe the attack? Was it visible, invisible? Was it a laser beam? And where did it come from?
Well, I'm not going to speculate on that because, first of all, the D-4 and the D-4S are constructed, their outer hull is titanium, and it's impervious to certain levels of EM and EM radiation to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
Based on my photographic samples, whatever the anomalies were, which were luminous white objects, would pass over the camera, and the camera would record the anomaly passed by the camera,
mm-hmm.
and the bit the anomaly passes by the camera and goes out of the camera field, the camera goes dead.
Hmm. Would it be safe to assume that someone or something is not liking your photography?
Well, you know, I've had several instances in which, in fact, and ironic that the camera would malfunction in the same location, but it says to me that it might not be an attack. It might be the fact that whatever the anomaly was, noticed that it was being imaged and that its overall atomic structure could have affected the electronic components of the camera and indeed caused them to malfunction and overload, which was the case on 4 of the instances in which my camera malfunctioned.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's too many variables to make that statement in terms of making a valid statement associated to what would cause the malfunction of the camera itself, but just based on the physical evidence and the evidence that the camera recorded during the time of the event, you can speculate, and based on the samples it recorded, that indeed that whatever caused the malfunction was directly associated to the anomalous object the camera photographed before it died.
Interesting. You know, it's worth speculating, worth thinking about that if you, for example, were part of a draconian, tyrannical alien species, which viewed humans as a food source and been in secret collaboration with our federal government for 60 years, and if they were, in fact, visiting Washington, D.C. on a regular basis, they might, in fact, want to hide their presence, and your camera taking all these pictures could constitute a threat to their continued covert activities. I was just curious, in addition to the vector for the White House, what other agencies have they targeted? For example, have they targeted the Pentagon, for example, or perhaps the Department of the Treasury or the Capitol building? Do you notice them flying in any other space vectors?
Well, you know, it's interesting you mentioned the Capitol building because my initial research, especially in Washington, D.C., took place at the U.S. Capitol building July 16, 2002. Mm-hmm. And it was ironic that July 16, 1952, in the same location in which I had my close encounter, the same thing happened. But the differences were the anomalies in 1952 were more, how should I say, it was more larger squadron of them, much larger squadron of anomalous objects than what I encountered at the U.S. Capitol building, which is more primarily a smaller cluster of anomalies, but they were essentially the same because in 1952, what passed by the U.S. Capitol Dome were luminous objects that were in a paired formation. It was a cluster of 14 paired objects. And the objects I photographed in 2002 were 2 paired objects or 4 anomalous objects sitting in the sky. And they were both moving in tandem and they both vanished inside what the camera photographed essentially was a wormhole that they generated in the sky above the U.S. Capitol building, and they vanished within that wormhole, and the camera photographed that event.
Hmm. Fascinating. Our the other gentleman coming on a little later might have some more information on the 1952 event. I was just curious, what other buildings or agencies in Washington, D.C. have you noticed besides the U.S. Capitol and the P-53 restricted airspace for the White House?
Well, you know, everything is primarily in the same airspace because Washington is designed where all of the U.S. government and government structured buildings are in the vicinity of the Capitol and the White House. So everything is in the same area. So realistically, what flies over the Capitol, flies over the White House, flies over the Pentagon, since everything is in the same airspace. So we can't specifically limit a region or area of Washington, D.C. per se to extraterrestrial visitation because of the fact that here I am seven blocks from the White House, which is not necessarily the White House itself, but I'm getting, without a doubt, anomalous activity, which clearly indicates a level of technology that's way beyond our level, of our current level of technology as it stands.
Sure. Two things real quick. If a private plane, for example, mistakenly flew into that P-53 restricted airspace, is it safe to assume they would be shot down or immediately fighter jets would be scrambled to get them out of that area?
They would be immediately escorted out or shot down. The first option is to escort them out.
Okay.
That's the logical option.
But
when it gets critical, you'll get shot down without a doubt.
Sure. But what's interesting is that how long have you been taking your photographs, Wilbur?
I started taking photographs in sixth grade.
Okay.
And then normally started showing up in 1992.
Okay, 1992. All right. Well, that 1992 to the present time, of course, is 22 years ago.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is that if you connect the dots and cross the T's, you realize that these objects have been flying in restricted airspace above our U.S. Capitol since 1992, according to your documentation.
Well, no, actually, let's back that up, because I've got a sample showing the same objects that showed up in 1952 taken in 1950. So they've been here.
Amazing.
That's proving, without a doubt. They're here. And
right.
I've got samples of the same objects from 1952 in our airspace last year. So they're still here.
Well, what's interesting, and I want everyone out, all my listeners, to think about this issue very carefully. If a private plane or a jet airliner were to mistakenly go into this restricted airspace around the White House and the Capitol, the so-called P-53, so-called restricted airspace, they would immediately be either shot down or escorted out, especially after 9/11. But these UFO spacecraft apparently go in and out of there as they please. You're able to take all kinds of pictures of them, and you've not only been able to do it for this year, but for decades. They go in and out, in and out. I'm sure you've heard of this. Did you hear about the one of the memos from Edward Snowden last year he released? He claimed that gray, tall reptilians were actually in control of the U.S. government, and they visited the Capitol frequently?
Well, you know, it's interesting that statement would be made, because I've got evidence, and not only evidence that I obtained with my camera technology, but evidence obtained by people who were in and around the U.S. Capitol building, which videoed beams of light shooting up from the dome itself into outer space. And the consistency of the sample that was presented to me, that was filmed at the U.S. Capitol building, is without a doubt 100% consistent with the anomalous objects that I'm photographing over my home, which, by the way, in my video samples show them appear from out of nowhere as if they enter into our realm using some kind of portal or Stargate-type technology, and they materialize into our realm where they show up on radar, and then they fly through the frame, and then they dematerialize, and when they dematerialize, they disappear on radar. But it indicates without a doubt that they can enter and exit into our airspace, and there's nothing we can do about it because we don't have the type of technology that's capable of intercepting multiple directional or multiple dimensional anomalies.
Do you think this is one reason why our government intentionally hides the fact that the ETs are here? I can't do anything about it.
Without a doubt, that may be indeed the case.
How long do you think it'll be before they actually complete this and give us the truth about their presence here?
Well, the aliens are doing it, but the problem is, when is the United States government going to confirm it? That's the question.
Sure.
Without a doubt, with all of the activity and all the materials that are being currently reported, indicate they're letting you know we're here. Now, with all of the data, and mind you, again, I'm seven blocks from the White House. Seven blocks away says that ET and ET cover-up does not exist. But my camera on a nightly basis says it does. Who do you believe, a politician sitting at a desk or the data coming off of my camera?
I think my many listeners around the world would give you already know the answer to that one.
So. You know, it's interesting. We're manipulated by these individuals, and we believe and put our trust in the people that we vote into office in believing that they're going to tell us the truth, and they're not. And they're going to sit there and tell you a lie and say there's no ET or ET cover-up. And on a nightly basis, I'm getting extraterrestrial anomalies that I initially documented in Area 51 over my home.
I have to tell you, Wilbur, that in addition to Area, I appreciate you sharing that with my listening audience about Area 51. But for my listeners out there, there's not only Area 51, but there's Area 52, Area 53, Area 54, and S4. And Area 52, 53, and 54, and S4 are reptilian bases staffed and manned, manned use a loosely term because they're not human, but staffed by reptilians, which humans are not allowed, but yet our taxpayers pay for that facility. We provide parts for their spacecraft to go in and out. And if any human were to approach that area, I'm told that they'll be instantly killed. It's more than just Area 51. Area 51,
because you know, again, here I'm going to mention Area 51, Sedona, Arizona, where I captured the same anomalies that I got in Area 51, Shreveport, Louisiana, where I got the same anomalies I got in Sedona, where I got the same anomalies I got in Area 51, and now the same anomalies over my house in D.C. That indicates a very strong possibility, at least based on Dr. Wood, who worked with me on uncovering aliens on Discovery Channel, that there is a very strong possibility that the frequency of the events that I photograph clearly indicate that there is an extraterrestrial presence and or a base in our vicinity.
Sure. Well, I'm sure my other guests will have a lot more to say about that. Certainly, you know, Wilbur, if you don't mind, would you mind if I brought on Scott Lemriel now for a few minutes? Because I wanted to get his opinion on it, just for a few minutes.
Not a problem.
Okay, great. Eric, would you mind, I know this is a little early, if you wouldn't mind calling Scott down in Hollywood? And then you and I will keep talking, too. What's the most unusual picture you've ever seen at night photographing there, Wilbur? I know that's difficult to probably lots of unusual things, but what's the most unusual thing you've ever seen?
Well, what I'm getting, let's just back things up a little bit, because I've gone beyond simple straight photography. And when you start documenting UFOs, the problems in documenting a UFO are the moments before and the moments after the event that you photograph, not the photograph that you present, but what happens before and what happens afterwards, because there's a disconnect when you start taking a picture of an object versus taking a video of an object, which gives you a more clearer picture because of the actions associated to whatever the object is you're photographing. But in terms of what I would think to be extraordinary in terms of what I've documented and presented in terms of my research, I think the more extraordinary anomalies were the objects from Area 51, the cylindrical objects, and the green spheres that I documented at the U.S. Capitol building in 2002, which, by the way, were documented in space by Apollo 7, Apollo 11, Apollo 14, and Apollo 16. So we know without a doubt that the objects that I encountered at the U.S. Capitol building were indeed extraterrestrial in origin, July 16, 2002, at least based on the physical presentation of that very same anomalous object on NASA footage from Apollo moon missions en route to the moon.
Sure, sure. You know, you're speaking to the choir here, Wilbur. I have no doubt at all that what you're saying is correct, and you've seen what you've seen and photographed what you've seen. I think your credibility is 100% as to what you photographed. So there's no doubts on my part as far as that goes. Just if you don't mind, Wilbur, I want to bring on Scott for a few minutes. Scott, are you there? Hello, Scott, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, great, Scott. This is Scott Lemriel. He's the author of The Say Race Agenda and has had face-to-face contact with the Galactic Alliance, a group of 435 million planets, mostly benevolent humans who care deeply about us. And, Scott, I just wanted to get your opinion of what my friend Wilbur here has been saying about his photography and the craft in and out of the D.C. area.
Hi, Wilbur.
How you doing, Scott?
Good to meet you. Yeah, I got to see
you. My pleasure to meet you, sir.
Hello? Are we on?
Yes, we're on. Uh-huh, we're on, Scott.
I got to see 40 of them. I take it. I wanted to make one thing clear because it wasn't clear to me at first. I was looking for the White House, but I would take that what you're photographing is your camera shooting at the airspace upward, above the White House.
It is shooting indeed upwards. I don't go for landmarks, and indeed the same thing applies to Area 51. Even though I was in Area 51, my photographs show the airspace, not the base.
I actually think you're safer doing it that way anyway.
Absolutely. I'm not interested in the base. I'm more interested in what happens in the sky.
Okay,
that's what UFO research is about.
Yeah, that was one question. That was really the only question I had. I kept looking for detail, and then I realized these were all night shots and shots upward in the atmosphere or the airspace above these particular areas.
Indeed.
Got that. I think maybe Ted's had me come on the show just to maybe give a little bit of background of what I know, and that has to do with a treaty that was signed under a blackmail during Eisenhower's reign as president that brought us into getting off-world technology during the Cold War with a totalitarian group, unfortunately. The first offer, the people he met with were human from another world. He turned that down. The second group, he got blackmailed into it at the same time the Soviets were. It was very clever how they did it. They are breaking an off-world treaty that goes back half a million years in order to interfere with this planet and its people. So,
are you there, Scott?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Are you hearing me?
Yeah, I'm hearing you fine. Just speak up a little bit if you could, Scott.
Yeah. And that entire, you might call it Cold War, off-world Cold War, is coming to a head. Fortunately for us, what I've discovered is it's going to be an uplifting transformation for people here, a very unexpected one, because of a recent decision that was made off-world about 3.5 years ago. So I hope that brings some light to your work and maybe some encouragement, too. We're heading in a very good direction, even though the world does not show that at this time.
Okay, great, Scott. Would you have any thoughts on who's actually visiting us, where they're from, the D.C. area?
Is Wilbur still on, or is it just you and I?
He should be there. Wilbur, are you there?
I'm still here, yes.
Oh, good.
Okay.
Good. Yeah. We're visited by, and have been for countless ages, by beings from many worlds. The poles of our planet flip overnight 180 degrees every 100,000 years. There have been six ice ages here in 600,000 years. So it's a very unique planet in this regard because when that event occurs, most of everything on the surface is destroyed and new land masses rise up from the seafloor. This is not a gradual event. It's a dramatic, catastrophic event that happens within 24 hours. A lot of people don't understand this because this is also very classified. An event like this is coming up, but from what I have learned from my contacts, they are in the process of suspending, and they have the ability to do this polar shift problem with this planet so that it can stabilize and mature like races have been able to do out there for millions of years. Here, no one's been able to do that past 100,000 years. And this goes back into galactic history that people know about and have recorded off-world. So if you get into a position of working with them and they can enlighten people a little bit about the true history that's gone on here, it's just absolutely amazing what really has taken place.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's amazing, Scott. Well, I don't want to take too much of Wilbur's time, but I just wanted to have him on, Wilbur, for a few minutes just to give his perspective on it. Since, Scott has been in contact benevolent ETs now for 52 years.
Thanks for sharing your info, Scott.
Yeah, I wanted to make one quick comment. Because a lot of people are being kept very naive and misled, and that is that there are mostly benevolent beings out in our Milky Way galaxy, but not all are. There are some people out there in the UFO circuits trying to say everybody's good out there, just our bad government that's doing all the bad stuff. That's not the case. There are also totalitarian groups outside of this planet. And
well, you know, they're not giving us the big picture, and I do believe they do feel that most people are not prepared or ready for extraterrestrial contact, and that's why they're holding the information back.
That's their justification. It's not accurate, but that's what they use to justify what they do. And it's more that they don't have control of what they're doing anymore. It's more that they really don't have the decision-making they would have as normal human beings. They've been affected through advanced misuse of technology. This goes back into a whole other area. I just wanted to share a little bit with you. Thanks, Wilbur. I didn't want to take up your time.
Thank you, Scott, for sharing your time today. You have a good day.
Thanks, Scott.
Wilbur, tell me something now. Tell me some of the most, I know that on your website there's some incredibly interesting green plasma, they look like plasma, they don't really have a defined form. Were those, did they look like individual spacecraft from your what your photograph showed?
You know, it's interesting, that sample, the green objects that I photographed and the samples that were photographed by Apollo 11, Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin, showed a fluorescent green anomaly that had fluidic properties associated to it. It was not consistent with any known solid matter type spacecraft that they had ever encountered. And indeed, the anomalies that I did photograph at the U.S. Capitol building, the green objects, they have some kind of form associated to them, even though you may think they appear to be plasma, at least based on the 2007 crash of the green sphere in Peru, where the green sphere crashed into the side of a mountain and carved a hole into it like an ice cream scoop. So if it was plasma, I would think that it would have another structure associated to it that would have some kind of force or effect that could indeed, you know, carve a hole out of a mountain. So I would think it would be something far greater than plasma, at least based on the material itself.
Absolutely. Wilbur, forgive me. Normally, I take a station break midway at least several times during the show in case people are, you know, just tuning in late. So I just wanted to do that now. Quickly, stay on the line, please. I just want to, if you've just tuned in, this is Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW here in Seattle on 1150 AM. We are the fastest growing UFO, metaphysical, and psychic program in the world. And we have on our program today, very lucky, Wilbur Allen, a wonderful UFO photographer who lives only six blocks away from the White House in Washington, D.C. And he has between 60 and 70,000 images of UFOs flying around the D.C. area, going into the White House area over and over and over again that he's seen for decades. Wilbur, would you mind taking some questions, if anybody had any questions for you?
I don't have any problems taking questions.
Okay, great. I'll give up the studio line in case people would like to call in. Our studio line here is area code 425-373-5527, or you can also dial toll-free within Western Washington at 1-888-298-5569. Wilbur, I find your topic so interesting that it's hard for me to break in. But one thing I wanted to ask you about, the green sphere that crashed in South America, did they find parts of it or remnants? Were they able to get did they find any wreckage from that sphere coming into the mountain?
Interesting, the 2007 event. Essentially, what happened was the green sphere crashed into the middle of a Peruvian village, which happened to have been situated on a mountain, and that the entire village had to be quarantined because everyone got sick. But what they were able to, the United States government was able to retrieve, was the liquid content of the hole.
Oh, interesting.
It was water. It was some kind of water in that hole when it once crashed. Huh. And you can't get water out of the side of a mountain.
Were there any reports about what was in the water or what kind of water it was?
After the crash and the initial data of the entire village being quarantined, the entire story fell off the map.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that sounds familiar.
That's how they cover it up. They'll let you know, okay, something happened just like Ebola, but then they're not going to give you the bigger picture that it's spreading rapidly, so they cover it up.
Right, right. Well, unfortunately, that happens quite a bit, and I wish there certainly was more disclosure. What do you think the future holds? Do you think, I mean, you've done this now for decades, photographing all these UFOs coming and going in the D.C. area in restricted airspace that any private plane or jet airliner would certainly be escorted out or shot down. What do you think the future holds? Do you think they're going to actually tell us the truth one of these days, or just try to keep it from us?
Well, you know, we're that saying, why fix what's not broken? And we're being held in the dark so much now. Why take the veil off of us now and just keep us in the dark? That's their intentions, and that's exactly what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing about it
has to do with Miley or Beyonce and some tennis shoes, but when it comes to something abstract like an extraterrestrial landing or an object that just happens to penetrate into our airspace, nothing's talked about. Nothing, not a word, nothing said.
Right. Right. Well, one of the things I think that's going on is that people are hungry for this knowledge, and they want disclosure. They want information. They want to know what's going on. They're sick and tired of the knowledge being kept from them or misled or lied to. That's why I think the ratings for my program have skyrocketed, and why I'm being listened to now and followed in over 60 countries on every major continent around the world. And I think people will eventually find out the truth. I had several astrologers on earlier this year on my program, including a very famous one, Susan Miller from New York City in April, and as well as John Hogue, who's a Nostradamus, the world's authority in Nostradamus. And they both said, from an astrological perspective, that this year was the year of truth. In other words, from now through the end of the year, the end of December, is when the truth will come out for humanity in all kinds of ways. This not only applies on the national, international level with governments, but also, I think, things regarding extraterrestrial life, UFOs. And this is a year that I really like, because it's a perfect environment for people seeking the truth, because I think more and more truth will be revealed.
Well, you know, the truth does have a way of coming to the surface, but even then, you can present something truthful in front of someone, and because they're misled into believing that their realities are the only realities that exist, that the truth that they're presented will not be accepted.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens. You can present, use that saying, leading the horse to the water and making it drink. You can't make a horse drink water if it doesn't want to. So that is indeed the case when you present information to an individual that does not want to believe the realities or the truth of the matter, that indeed extraterrestrials are visiting our airspace.
Sure, sure, sure. Have you, absolutely right, I agree with you there, Wilbur. Have you been to other major cities, for example, New York City, Chicago, Miami, Los Angeles, and done any kind of similar photography? Or
my research is broad based. I've done research in New Jersey, Baltimore, Washington, Louisiana, Indianapolis, Indiana, Arizona, Nevada. Most places where I've been sent on assignment. In fact, all the places I've worked, I've had extraterrestrial contact and photographic evidence to support that claim.
Interesting. Interesting. As regarding the frequency of the photography and the visit that, you know, the UFOs that you've seen in D.C. area, is the volume as much in other cities, or is it mostly around D.C. that you've seen?
Well, I'm looking at the specific data. Now, when I look at the data from Area 51 and I look at the data from Sedona and then I look at the data from Washington, D.C., I see that in terms of the frequency, that there are even amounts of UFOs in Nevada, Arizona, Louisiana, Washington, D.C., Baltimore, Maryland, upstate New York. Wherever there are UFO sightings, it seems to be localized to that specific area. And they're localized in the sense that whatever these objects are that we are seeing –
are consistent, which indicates that that technology is from the same race or entities that are visiting our planet.
Sure. Interesting. Now, you yourself have had contact with the Greys. Have you had contact with any other extraterrestrial entities?
Well, during my encounter at the U.S. Capitol building July 16th in 2002, I encountered what NASA confirms does indeed exist, is a non-visible life form, and non-visible life forms are called non-corporeal, and there were non-corporeal extraterrestrial biological entities at the U.S. Capitol building July 16th, 2002.
Could you explain to my listeners what you saw exactly? Was it just a sense impression, or just was it at night, during the day, or how did you encounter them?
I have three samples of the same anomaly. Well, the first example of the anomaly I photographed was in the rear of the Reflection Pool Park at the U.S. Capitol building. The second representation of that same anomaly, the anomaly entered the reflection pool and was swimming in the water. And in the water, since the reflection pool was 100% clear, the water
swimming
served
the water?
As a magnifier, and it magnified whatever this new luminous anomaly was that was swimming in the reflection pool. And its overall characteristics in it, and the photograph that I was able to obtain looked like, in my opinion, six or seven foot long amoeba.
Interesting. Now, is that on your website, that picture of the amoeba?
Yes, it is.
Huh, wow.
If you go into, there's two chapters of Washington, D.C. There's Washington, D.C. with the high technology, which is at the top of the website. And then there's Washington, D.C. with the green spheres. And then there's Washington, D.C. with a young lady that has a pearl-shaped marble anomaly above her head. Mm-hmm. And that pearl-shaped marble anomaly was discharged from the green spheres at the U.S. Capitol building, and it just happened to follow me to a street 9 months, about 4 months later, in downtown Washington, D.C. So I started getting documentation in 2002 of events on three separate occasions. At that time, to me, that was a record. But now I get documentation on a nightly basis, so it blows away 2002 tenfold.
Wow, interesting. This amoeba, did it have any color to it, or did it appear to be like in another dimension?
I have a color sample of it. Had luminous characteristics associated to it, and it showed cellular definition in terms of its overall characteristics, but it was indeed the only close thing that I could describe it as would be an amoeba, but it was maybe 6 or 8 feet long.
My goodness.
Big.
My goodness.
Whatever it was.
Huh. How long did you watch it for?
Yes.
How long did you see it there in the pool?
Well, what's interesting, I was working on an album cover for Def Jam Records, and the artist that I was photographing happened to see the anomaly in the reflection pool behind him, and the look on his face on the photographs that I photographed during the time of the event indicated that that guy had seen something that scared the hell out of him, and it represented in this look of fear that was on his face.
Mm-hmm.
But the entire event lasted about an hour and a half at the U.S. Capitol building.
So this amoeba-like entity was swimming around this reflection pool for an hour and a half.
Yes.
My goodness. Wow. Would you care to share?
Initially, on the samples at the U.S. Capitol building, on the first sample I photographed, in the photograph which showed the amoeba anomaly on the ground and standing in the rear of the reflection pool park, or standing, it didn't have legs. Mm-hmm. But in that sample was this large, maybe the size of a small Volkswagen disc above the reflection pool.
Hmm.
And it was luminous white.
Interesting. Do you have any other out-of-this-world examples you might like to share regarding different entities you've seen at the Capitol?
Well, I don't per se go to the Capitol just to hang out for aliens to look for them, because they're everywhere here.
Right.
But at that time, It was indeed inconsistent with anything anyone has ever seen before. But what was interesting is that it was confirmed by Buzz Aldrin, Neil Armstrong, and Edgar Mitchell, which are Apollo astronauts, which indicated that they encountered and documented anomalies with similar attributes, if not exactly the same attributes, as the objects that I photographed at the U.S. Capitol building, except theirs were in space. Mine were on Earth and on the ground at the U.S. Capitol building.
Well, it certainly stands to reason, Wilbur, that if they're out in space and Buzz Aldrin and the other astronauts are seen, and then they would be here on Earth as well. Of course, hidden, you know, they probably like to keep themselves hidden, but, you know, but that would make a lot of sense. We've got about 2 minutes left in for the show, and I just want to tell my listeners to please hold on, because in a few minutes we're going to have two representatives of the Galactic Alliance on, Colleen Nodell, Colleen and Sheldon Nodell from California, and they'll be talking about the Galactic Alliance. But before we go, Wilbur, we've got about a minute or a minute and a half left, and I want to give you the rest of the time on the show to kind of wrap it up and give my many listeners some parting words.
Well, guys, if you're out there and you do see anomalous objects, don't hesitate to take your cell phone out and shoot video. Try not to shoot pictures, because the problems we're having with a photograph is you can't confirm what happens before or after the event. The video clearly shows indeed the event going down as it takes place. And if you get a chance and you need to look up information based on numerous levels of UFO activity that's out there, check out my website, ufodc.com. I've got 19 chapters, over 70,000 samples of forensic scientific photographic evidence showing our airspace being visited by technology that's way beyond our level of technology.
Fascinating. And do you plan to do this for the rest of your life, Wilbur?
Actually, it's something I do right now because it is that which I choose to do. Mm-hmm. But at some point, I'm going to let the agencies like NASA pick up where I left off and confirm the data that indeed we're being visited on a daily basis, which they're not telling us.
Do you think NASA can be trusted, though?
To an extent, the old guard is gone, but then, you know, there's a lot of the old ways still in the new regime, and, you know, those things are subject to change. But as things are going, we're still being held in the dark, and there's no accountability for the activity that does transpire that's being documented by various people on the ground. And until they fess up and say that, yes, indeed, there are aliens visiting Earth, then we're going to be held in the dark.
Sure, sure. Just as a suggestion, Wilbur, you may instead create a private foundation, because I don't think a lot of people trust the government to give anybody the truth about anything. But I sure want to thank you for your wonderful work, Wilbur. You're a one-of-a-kind guy doing the kind of photography and work you do. And on behalf of all my listeners, thank you so much.
Let me note, I'm self-funded, so I take donations. You can donate to my website on any of the pages on UFODC.com.
Wonderful. I'm sure we have to replace that equipment sometimes that suddenly starts melting when they're taking pictures.
It is not inexpensive, indeed.
Okay. Okay, wonderful. Wilbur, thank you so much for being on the program today.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, my friend. Take care. Hold on, my many listeners. We'll be going to our next guest in a few minutes. Have a good day, Wilbur.